caused my own fascination with the subject matter, which will be presenting this night and also Monday night. My interest in transformation was really awakened in Mumbai when I was in the treatment of one Ayurvedic doctor, Mr. Naram. Some of you know that I had been making a concert and lecture tour in war-ridden Serbia with a provocative title, A Song for Peace. And at that time, there were two attempts on my life: assassinators from the party who was driving Serbia into war were not enthused that each evening I had a group of 10,000 people listening to a peace message at a time when the country went into war. Young people did not were affected by these messages, and some of them declined service at the rifle or at the cannons and so on, and became objectors to the war. And at that time, one of these attempts was almost successful when I was under, you know, they threw bombs with biochem on me when I was on the stage, and I thought it was our own fog machine which had gone off too early. I thought, you know, we used the fog machine during one song to have a particular mystical effect. And I thought, wow, it's a little bit too early for the fog machine. But then when rows of people went down on the ground and lost consciousness, I understood it was something else than our harmless fog machine. Anyway, so afterwards, I fainted, I collapsed from the stage, and I had to go to some treatment, first in the Black Sea and then Ayurvedic treatment in Mumbai. And my doctor, very capable Ayurvedic practitioner, told me a story which spurned my interest in the art of transformation. I always believe that spiritual life or spiritual practice should bring us to a level where we were not before earlier. There should happen something when we are in a spiritual practice, something which you could say changes our heart or our consciousness, and it should not be just something mental, it should be very practical. This Ayurvedic doctor told me a story about his own guru, that one day Swami Ram, this was his name, called my doctor to the place where he was treating 150 patients a day, and he asked him, my doctor, Dr. Naram, "Are you satisfied with the teachings which I have given to you?" Dr. Naram answered, "Yes, very much so." "Is there something which remains to be explained? Any questions which you have?" Dr. Naram answered, "Not at this moment." Then this Swami Ram, who was 120 years old or so, I don't think anyone counted the years. In India, one is not so particular about years. And nobody really knows when he is born. But let us say 120 years. The Swami Ram looked into the eyes of Dr. Naram and said, "Tell me
when someone gives up his old and useless shirt to take on a new shirt, are you happy or are you sad?
Dr. Naram, he knew these were not just questions like how are you, where you give a quick answer. He thought, well, am I happy when someone gives up his old and useless shirt?
Well, I'm not exactly happy,
but I guess I'm not sad either. So then Swami Ramdas said, so
come back in 20 minutes and do not grieve.
Then he went into the cave from where he treated people, closed the door, took a shower. Dr. Naram heard the water buckets. And then after 20 minutes, Dr. Naram entered the cave and he saw something unusual. He saw, or let us say like this, he didn't see Swami Ram. Swami Ram had gone and he had left his old and useless shirt, his body, on the ground. Yes, he had died. Imagine you come into the place of someone whom you love and he asked you the enigmatic questions. Are you happy when someone gives up the old and useless shirt? Or are you sad? And then 20 minutes afterwards he has given up what he considered the old and useless shirt, the old body. You are slightly touched, I would say, or greatly touched. So when Dr. Naram told me how his own guru left the world when he felt his mission was completed, and how he was so entirely undisturbed, at the most disturbing thing which any one of us can think of, that is death of the body, then I was highly intrigued. I could see. To be undisturbed in the eye of the greatest disturbance means your consciousness has to be free from fear, has to be free from identification with the body, free from ego, has to be totally on another level, where you see yourself as an eternal spiritual soul. And obviously, this Swami Ram just didn't see himself like this, as an intellectual sport, or as a unrealized mental conception. No. For him it was the naked truth that yes, I am different from my material body, and what happens to my material body is not something which either brings me joy or grief. I use it as someone would use his vehicle. This I call a transformed consciousness. There's one European thinker whose name I just can't speak properly because I absolutely do not know the French language. So if someone knows, please bear with me. Teilhard de Chardin. Thank you. Chardin. Yes. He used to say, it's not that we are human beings who have a soul. We are souls who make a human experience at the moment. And with this sentence, he meant,
All of us are eternal and we inhabit this physical body just for a brief moment, a split second, you could say, in eternal time. We are spirit in the material world, spiritual souls who inhabit a foreign territory, a temporary territory. And this is my first point today. I would like to talk of the two worlds, the world of spirit and the world of matter, which in some strange and fascinating way we inhabit at the same time. Yes, we all have a human experience. We have a human body, we fall in love, we need to feed the body, and we go to that private room where we want to be absolutely alone for 5 minutes to put the end product of digestion into that you know what. I hope I say it in decent English. Yes, but then there is also the soul. There's us who feels the narrowness of our material existence, who wants to be free from the conditions and laws which so much inhibit free movement, which incarcerate the eternal soul and make it subject to the temporary, to the material. In the Vedas, we understand that there is a spiritual realm of which we are parts and residents, and then there is the material realm, the material world, and we are constantly walking at a fine borderline between these two worlds, the world of the spirit and the world of matter. This borderline has been described in Sanskrit to be tatashta, which is the fine and ever-changing line between the ocean and the land. I think 2 years ago, I was in Durban for a festival, a huge spiritual festival, and every morning I used to make a walk on the, I don't know, is it the Pacific Ocean, I suppose, huh? I did a japa walk, a meditational walk, just to meditate and at the same time get some fresh air. And I do remember this fine borderline, which was sometimes ocean, when the water came rushing in, and sometimes dry land. It would always change, that fine line. I think as children, we all, you are New Yorkers, you also sometimes go to the ocean, I suppose. Do you remember when you were a child and joyful? You know, Hare Krishna. You would dance with the water. When it came rushing in, you ran this direction, then you went this direction when the waves came out, and there was this fine line, sometimes water, sometimes land. This is which describes our situation just very nicely. Sometimes we are more spiritually, we are awake to our spiritual calling, we are inspired, we are enthusiastic, we feel we have a connection with God and with all living entities. And sometimes this covering energy, which comes like the water over the beach and covers the land, this material energy comes flooding over us, and we become disturbed, we become angry, easily upsettable, if this is an English word, agitated, just disturbed New Yorkers. You can see the energy is working. So the spiritual life or the art of transformation wants to achieve that you can make a conscious and I would say an informed choice to come on the land, to come into the spiritual atmosphere where you understand the laws of eternity, where you understand I'm a spirit soul in the material world, and where you could in theory lose your fear of death, because you know only your body dies, but you are unaffected by this. Now, if you know the art of transformation, or you could say the upliftment of consciousness, you will be in all circumstances, even in the subway, or on the chair of the dentist, you know, which is a severe test of spirit, of how much you identify with the body, you will be able to maintain your calm. You will be able to remain connected, because you know how to transfer your consciousness from the material to the spiritual level. And in these two evenings, we want to teach you this art of transformation, but don't expect too much from me. Most probably you have to practice a lifetime to come there. It's not that in two evenings we put you in a time machine and then you are all of a sudden in the paradise of spiritual consciousness. But we can give you, or hope to give you, some powerful tools which can really help you to come on that level of consciousness. Now I realize that all of us are sweating, including myself. Is it too hot for you to concentrate, or will you give your best? Give your best. Good. I will also give my best. It won't be too theoretical, because I only know practical English, not theoretical English. Oh yeah. This morning I have prayed for clouds, and I don't think it has anything to do with me, but at least my false ego could believe there are clouds now outside, and my false ego likes to believe I'm moving heaven and earth. But I must really say, when the clouds came, I greeted them in joy. Yes. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Simate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nitinamine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavani Paskatya Deshatarine Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitana Prabhu Nitananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara
Shiva Shadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya There's a great problem for people who do not yet know spiritual practice. The problem is a vacuum in the heart which burns with desires. Many people are under this constant influence of the fire of desire which just burns in them. Oh, I want to have money, I want to have good looks, I want to have success. And already they know, even if I have money, good looks and success, the fire won't be still. It will desire more money, more good looks and more success. As long as the spiritual vacuum keeps on being there in the heart, a hole in the heart, the desire to fill this vacuum with this is something so that I have peace will be there and will be unquenchable, it will be unstoppable. No one ever has become satisfied by following material desires. Instead, it is seen the more people go into desire, the more they want, the more they wish, the more fuel they put on the fire of desire, the stronger the fire will demand for more, 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 will grow. And in this way, the heat or the fever in the heart becomes a real problem. You could say it's restlessness, it's insecurity, it's all these blah blahs which many people can talk about. But really it's a vacuum. And being not fulfilled, not being whole, a hole in the heart. However, when a person has come on the spiritual level, he has discovered in the heart, I would say, the greatest treasure which the human being has. It's an underground river of which flows, an underground supply of energy. And this energy, to describe the spiritual energy, I can only give one word which is not exactly what people understand the word to mean. It is a feeling of unconditional love. Deep in the heart, this river of unconditional love, of spiritual energy, is maybe a better word, flows. And as long as people are out of contact, disconnected with this source of energy, they will keep on trying to look for it everywhere else than where it is. The Vedic scriptures give us the example of a musk deer who falls in love with the scent of musk and now runs all over the forest to find the origin of the musk. Do I say it properly? Musk is a scent. The musk deer does know that this musk comes from a little gland which is just over the navel and which produces this scent, and therefore it runs to the spring, to the old oak tree, to the mountain, wherever it suspects the musk to be, doesn't know where to find it. So we don't know how to access this deep spiritual energy which belongs to us as spiritual beings. We will just try to satisfy this burning, a burning fire of desire. In the Vedas you find many times spiritual truth discussed in the form of dialogues, and there is one Maitreyi, or with the wife of Yajnavalkya. Maitreyi asks her husband, "My dear husband, please tell me, what are the two things human beings are most interested in?" Yajnavalkya says, "Good question." And then he explains. The two things human beings are most interested in are to be loved and to love. That is, to receive love and to give love. This is what is deep within the human soul, and this is the energy of that spiritual current or river which is flowing deeply inside of us. That energy of we call it bhakti in our Krishna conscious tradition. That energy or that stream of energy which comes from God and which goes back to God. In that circular river or circular energetic circle, the human being reaches its perfection or his perfection. To experience the love of God and to be able to respond to this love, that is the free flow of spiritual life, or free flow of energy. And each one of us, as a resident of the spiritual world, captured in the body, is deeply longing for this fulfillment, for this to be in this dream, to be afloat and alive and alive. That's also a new English word, I can imagine. To be alive, not alive, to be alive in that stream. Yes, let's be creative with language. and to really experience this and be carried by this, that's what we wish for. Now, to get to this point, I've made a note. The art of transformation is required. When we speak of transformation, what do we mean exactly, and where should the transformation happen? The transformation must happen in the heart. Now, according to the Vedic understanding, each one of us has not exactly two hearts, but listen to this. There are two aspects of the heart. One is an outer aspect and one is an inner aspect. The outer heart is called Hridaya, and the inner is called Chitta. Whatever you understand in your heart on the outer level will leave you. You know, knowledge, for instance, which you have heard, or information which you learn in the school. Only what you realize and which is imprinted in the deeper level of your consciousness, it's called chitta, remains with you. And if we want to transform someone or ourselves, we have to be very careful that whatever we do doesn't remain on the outer level, but goes deep into the core of the heart. I would like to give you an example. Many people nowadays are interested in meditation. Many people nowadays are, interested in the expansion of their consciousness and so on. But so many people do this so superficially, and it stays just on the surface of their heart, whatever they learn. And when the real tests of life come, when you are put on the anvil of God and shaped by your destiny, then everything leaves you. It's not this type of transformation. We call it the parrot transformation, which is interesting. It must go to the depths of your being. When a parrot, you can teach a parrot a language, but when the cat comes, he doesn't speak English any longer. He will go like talk his parrot language. It's superficial. It's not really taken root. So transformation is not just the transformation of the heart cannot just remain on the surface. It has to go deep inside. And here I want to give you the example of the alchemists of Europe. I don't know if you have heard about this. There was a group of mystics in Europe who proclaimed that they could transform ordinary iron into gold. 24 karat gold. They had some alchemistical process. It had to do with quicksilver. I have not learned this formula up till now. And they were very much looked after. But from the records, we hear that there were only two real alchemists. The others were swindlers. They just did something where they coated the metal with a golden, what is it called? Paint, yes. But of course, in the winter, this would show, when the snow came and the cold temperature, then the paint would peel off and fall off. In order to really transform ordinary iron into gold, you can't just paint it. You have to enter in some ways onto the molecular level and work against what is called in physics the strong force which keeps the molecules or the atoms apart from each other and just keeps this atomic structure fixed so that iron remains iron and doesn't become a bat all of a sudden or an apple. So on. So alchemists had to have the formula to go deep into the iron in order to make it into permanent gold. And this is what we mean with the art of transformation. You have to go deep into your heart. You have to enter into the innermost heart to really make you a different person. To really make you unafraid of, for instance, physical death when it comes. To really keep you free from the unending attack of material desires. You can't just do it on a superficial level. It's simply not possible. By the way, those of you who want to make iron into gold, I hear New York is interested in money, and I can give you the tip. You have to drink quicksilver
and then urinate in full moon time on the iron, and then it is supposed to be turning into gold. But those of you who drink quicksilver will not see the morning. They will be dead. I heard there was one yogi who knew the art and who would supply Gandhi for his non-violent resistance movement with gold. But he was the only one who could survive this. Someone tried to imitate him and he died instantly. So please don't try it. that's not good.
Hare Krishna.
When I talk about changing the innermost core of the heart, I have a person in mind who is very, very dear to us. His name is Ras Khan. Ras Khan was a man who had attraction to a Hindu boy. He was from the Muslim community and he had this attraction to the boy. I don't know the right English word. It's something like pedophile. Pedophile. Yes. So one day it happened that some saints came from the sacred town of Yavat and they talked about Krishna to each other. Oh, Krishna's toenails are so beautiful. They are like moons which shine in the night. 10 moons, moving moons on the toenails of Krishna. They talk just lovingly. And Ras Khan heard this. And he understood it wrongly. He thought, wow, if anyone is so much in love with a boy that they say his toenails are like moving moons, then this boy must have extraordinary beauty. So he went to the saints and said, about whom are you talking? And the saints looked at his dark effulgence, you know, his being full of material desires. And they said, no one, no one, no one, no one. We didn't talk about anything. But Ras Khan was a real Ras Khan at that time, it means rascal. He took out his knife and he attacked one of the saints and said, if you don't tell me where I can find this boy, I will kill you. The saint was really, he had some other duties to do and he didn't want to be killed. He said, he's not a boy like you think. Then how is he? The saint took a picture. You know, he had a turban. At that time, turbans were worn just like you wear a tie in New York. He took a picture of Krishna out of the turban and he showed it to Ras Khan. This is my lord, he said with tears in his eyes. Ras Khan said, can I have the picture, please? I want to find him. The saint said, well, before you take your knife out another time, here's the picture. So Ras Khan took the picture and somehow he just didn't get it. He thought, this is a boy who's just extraordinary beautiful. And he went burning with desires to the holy town of Vrindavan and asked everyone, where can I find this boy, please? He said, you won't find him so easily. Finally, someone who took pity on this Ras Khan said, he is not an ordinary boy. He's worshipped in the temple on top of the Govardhan hill. Raskan said, thank you very much. And he went in the direction of the temple. He wanted to enter, but the people saw he was just so dirty and so unbecoming that they called the guards, and the guards threw him out and said, no place for you here in the temple. So he went to a lake just next to that Govardhan temple. Is the lake of is called Govindakund, and there he just sat down and he said, if you are so powerful as people say, if you are in the hearts of everyone as people say, then please hear me. I have come to find you. I have given up my ordinary life. And if I don't find you, I will fast till death. Raskan, very determined, because he couldn't find the boy in any other way than just by praying, began to pray and pray and pray, and finally the prayers reached Krishna's ear, and he appeared to Raskan as a beautiful young boy. He took that, is it called cloak or disguise, and stood before him in that form. Raskan, who was still a little passionate, driven by desires, came to him to embrace him, and as he came closer, Krishna showed an enormous effulgence, as if thousands of suns had risen simultaneously. And Raskan closed his eyes and then looked again, and by the light of Krishna's revelation, changed his heart. And his passion, his material passion, material desires, were transformed. Iron was transformed into pure gold, the gold of pure love, which then made him capable to become a God-realized person, a saint, a lover of God. He wrote many, many poems which are sung today, and I will recite to you one poem. Don't worry, I won't sing it. Oh, my dear Lord, if I have to be born again in human form, I wish to become a cowherder in the sacred land of Vrindavan. However, if you think I'm so fallen that I have to be born in non-human form, let me become one of your cows. Should you, however, decide that I, who have a heart of stone, should become a stone, then my prayer is that I become a stone on the sacred mount Govardhan. And you know, people in Vrindavan sing these songs again and again and again, because here someone has made the transformation of the heart. All this means the transformation of desire, where you no longer have this burning flames of desire, where you want to fill the vacuum in your heart with inappropriate things, material things which don't work. But now you have love in your heart. Love is also an emotion. You wish to give your love and you wish to receive love. The iron has become gold. Now your heart is no longer a burning place of material desires. It has become a riverbed for the river of love. Hare Krishna. It was wonderful. I have told you a little bit about the alchemist process, how to change
iron into gold. I have cautioned you not to do it because it would you would risk your life. I would now briefly give you a foretaste of what is going to be detailed on Monday. Monday evening I want to give you a very, very practical process, an spiritual alchemy, if you so wish, how to change your desires from material desires, which won't satisfy the vacuum, into spiritual desires where you can experience the river of love. But here I just want to summarize what I have what we have learned the last time when we were discussing, I think it was Vedic psychology in this room. I will now address the seekers amongst you who are a little bit more advanced already, but also I will try to make it simple for those who are new to this spiritual culture. If you want to change your heart, you really have to change your thoughts. It's so, there is a definition of madness. Madness is to keep on thinking the same things as you have always been thought, and think you can have a different life, a new life. See, the thinking gives birth to actions. And if you always think the same things, you will do the same things. And if you will always do the same things, you will really remain the same person. You will remain a prisoner of the same little world in which you are. You have to learn to think new thoughts so that you can think even the impossible, which is outside the circle of what you usually do, and then you have to do it. Each one of us lives in the circle of the past. Past means what you have thought yesterday and the day before and what you have done, and your life now at this second in time is a result of your thoughts and actions of the past. If you want to ever have a new life, you must step out of this circle. And then you can think new thoughts and do new activities. By the way, this bold step out of the circle shouldn't be done one time. I'm now addressing the Hare Krishnas amongst you, the Hare Krishna people amongst you. Don't think with your one step into a movement you have transformed your heart. It's an illusion. You have to keep on going out of circles because your mind will always try to look for a circle, a secure wall which are limiting you and keep you from the world of opportunities which is out of that circle. So the first Krishna in the Gita says, for those who are interested in the art of transformation, he says, the first thing is to think of new thoughts. And what he means in particularly is to think of him, to think of God. Because by these thoughts, your whole personality will just change. My dear people, my dear friends and my dear skeptics, I heard we have a seminar here called Bhagavad Gita for the Skeptics. It's a very interesting title. You have to start with the mind. You have to start with the thinking. And that's why we do in spiritual life. We hear sacred scripture, we hear spiritual discussions and talks. We want to think new thoughts.
We want to actually experience a flame in the wax.
I have to explain it. The mind is like wax, and the thought of God is like a wonderful flame which will give new shape to the wax of the mind. It's just like if I would have a candle and lit it, thank you. Then the candle flame, which would dance on the top of the candle, would burn the candle and would reshape the wax, the wax. It would flow, wax even. It would flow in a different way. So if you, this is an analogy, if you think especially of God in your mind, there will be something which will change that mind. And you will think a new thought and live a new life. The second point is that you need to do something in order to influence your being. It's Krishna says, Bhava Mat Bhakto, become my devotee. That means engage your senses and your legs and so on in something which is spiritual. Like with your legs you can walk to the temple, with your eyes you can look at the beautiful altar, with your mind you can read spiritual scriptures, and so on and so forth. And by these activities you will totally change your life. I want to give you an example how certain activities can change you. I have heard an experience in Japan. In Japan, people are so stressed, I heard, because they work 24 jobs a day. But then they found out, please give me your pen, don't worry, that if you are so stressed and if you just put, while you work, a pen in your mouth and bring your mouth into the smiling position by force. You know, not like Anna, it won't be such a beautiful smile as Ananda Dev's smile. If you just do this much and you go like that, please don't laugh so hard. Then somehow I can't explain it, but some biochemical reaction comes, and some, what was it called, serotonin. You know everything, yes, serotonin. There's some chemical begins to be released and just cures your whole body. I have heard this. This is a serious study. I mean, it's not that just I'm saying some nonsense. It is really working. And I must admit to you, there was just 3 weeks a time when I was absolutely under stress. And I just, you know, it happens even to a Swami. I just couldn't get out of it. And then I thought, I mean, I hope no one sees me, but let me try it, you know. And then I took a spoon in there. I didn't want it. And I mean, I felt great relief. I feel a little foolish to admit this, but we can be honest in the family, you know. So if such an activity, you know, a material activity will have a material influence, don't you think if you use your active senses, Yadunath, in connection with Krishna, you will be totally transformed? So this is the second thing. You need to do something. In your spiritual life, a spiritual activity like
like regular meditation, regular chanting of the holy names, regular eating offered food, and you will see it will just totally transform you. The last two items are, I will go a little quick through it. You should, according to Krishna's formula, alchemistic formula, you should do something to worship Krishna every day. You should do something in the act of worshiping God. You will make such a contact with Him that you will feel Him in your life. You can even just before you go out of your room, offer a stick of incense or bring a simple flower to Him, or even put a glass of fresh water and just offer it actively. It will transform you. Gaura Shakti, it works. You just need to do it daily. And the last thing, I talked about it last time, is you must offer your obeisances. My dear friends and devotees, posture has a great influence on the mind. Posture. I always tell the story of, you know, a person who felt very miserable and who went like this to a saint and who said, I'm so miserable, so absolutely miserable. And the saint this time didn't give any advice. He just took on the same posture, was silent for 1 minute, and after 1 minute exclaimed with great enthusiasm, "It works! I also feel miserable now." Posture, so important. It influences your mind, your heart. Now imagine you offer your obeisances, you bow down. How much your heart is changed by this. In the act of offering an obeisance, your brain or analytical part goes down and your heart raises over the ground, over the brain. To make an obeisance is a war declaration of the to the materialistic and rationalistic mind. Oh, it changes. So let me summarize, my dear friends. The art of transformation is something which needs to be experienced in the heart. The heart is the place where desires are born and disappear. Your material desires will disappear when you go deep, deep into your heart and contact that source of energy, I would say the river of love, that spiritual energy within you. And you can do this if you apply the art of transformation, which according to Krishna's formula has four items. That is, you think about Him and about spiritual things. You actively do something with your senses in the service. You perform worship and you offer obeisances. Those who are on this path, I really request you to make a checklist through which you go every day, and in this way, see, do I do these things? You can read about this in the 18th chapter of the Gita, verse 54. You can do this. Now, on Monday, I intend to give a much more scientific, this was a very spiritual and religious process of changing the heart, but on Monday I will go with you on a journey and go through with you through 5 steps which can make miracles happen in your life. It is from an ancient work, the Srimad Bhagavatam, and I really hope that your interest and fascination is born. Would be very happy if you would come to the second part. We can together explore this. I want to end with a little remark which comes from this knowledge that we are between, that we always can decide in which world we are going to be. I really want to make you alert to the fact that at any moment or every moment of your life you have the ability to make a choice to be on the spiritual platform. You can do this in the subway or in the university. You don't need to become a monk or do external changes like in your what is it called, haircut or dress or whatever, because the transformation is really something which has to be happening in the heart. Very often people who make external changes are forgetting the heart, forgetting the depths. So it's not even always advantageous to make external changes. But you do have this constant opportunity, this constant invitation, because you are a spiritual being who can at any time in his or her life transform. And my spiritual master, he once said, and I always remember this because he has also written about it consistently, that the whole aim of spiritual life is this transformation of the heart, which means this recognition of the chance and this usage or using of this chance. And I really wish from my heart, I really wish every one of you that you can be enough free in your mind and enough free in your life that you can make use of this unique gift, most probably your most important gift, that is the ability to choose on which platform or in which world you wish to be. So I want to thank you very much for being so patient. Thank you.
I want to thank Sachinanda Maharaj for another wonderful class. Just incredible.
You are very kind to a jet-lagged, spaced-out Swami. Thank you.
Such a genuine, heartfelt plea for us to get serious and to go deeper and not be superficial about our transformations. We each need a transformation. We each want a transformation. It's not about the superficiality of shaving your head or wearing a Krishna Army T-shirt or getting a cool Sanskrit name. These things are superficial for the superficial, and they're significant for the more thoughtful and deep among us. So it's up to us as to what it's going to be. So thank you for pointing that out. I'm very much looking forward to part two, The Art of Transformation, part two, on Monday, not Tuesday, but Monday at 7 o'clock. There will be no program here on Tuesday. So the Monday night program will take the place of Tuesday just for next week. DVDs of this class and all classes here are available. See Matthew if you're interested in taking home a DVD of this class for some small donation. And Maharaj referenced the Bhagavad Gita class, which I would just like to give a plug for. It's every Saturday. It's a 12-week session. They meet once a week from 1 o'clock to 2:15 upstairs in the yoga room. And that's the Bhagavad Gita class. See Rasanath. He's here somewhere. He's right there by the door. Please see him for further information or for him to just sign up. And that's also just for a donation. It's a great class. It's geared toward beginners. If you have no idea what the Bhagavad Gita is or just some slight idea what the Bhagavad Gita is, it's perfect for you. So please see Rasanath and take advantage of his wonderful Bhagavad Gita class. In your programs is a comment card. Actually, let me get to that in just 1 minute. I would like to just quickly welcome back Yogi Purush Prabhu, our temple president. He's been gone for a couple of weeks. It's wonderful to have him back. I failed to do that at the beginning. I also failed to thank Keshavacharya and the Kirtaniyas here for their wonderful kirtan at the beginning. It's a very special event coming up this Saturday. Last Saturday we celebrated Janmashtami here. That's Krishna Janmashtami. That's the appearance of Krishna. Some people say that God is a man. Some people say God is neither male or female. We say God is both male and female. There's male and female here, so we get that from God, who has a feminine aspect and a masculine aspect. We celebrated the appearance of the masculine aspect, Sri Krishna, last Saturday. This Saturday is Radhastami, the celebration of the appearance of the feminine aspect of God, Srimati Radharani. So we invite you all to come at 6 o'clock Saturday. It's a great big celebration, very much like the last week's Janmashtami celebration. So if anybody would like to contribute any service to help getting everything set up, we're going to be doing decorations, we're going to be doing food preparations. It is said that Radharani has 25 principal transcendental qualities. So we want to match those qualities with food. And we're going to shoot for 25 sweet and 25 salty food preparations to offer her. So if you have any interest, desire in helping us in any way with preparing something, and these preparations don't have to be for 100 people, just small preparations, please see me and I will take down your name and contact information and we'll get in touch with you, because we do need a lot of help in getting ready. People are going to be gathering here at around 12 o'clock on Saturday afternoon, and the program itself will start at 6 o'clock. So if you're interested in any service, please see me. I think that's all I'll say about that. In your programs are the comment cards. If it's your first or second time here, if you've never filled out a comment card before, please do that right now. Gaur Kumar and Ari will be walking around with pens. Just take a moment before we go upstairs to eat and fill out the card. And before you go out, they will be there with baskets. You can give your card to them on your way upstairs. If you've filled out one of these cards already, please still just put your name on the card and hand in that card. You don't have to fill out anything else. If you'd like to fill out more, if you have a comment, we really welcome your comments. We want to know what you're thinking, what you're feeling about the programs. So please fill out the card and hand them in to Gaur Kumar or Ari on the way out. So just do that right now before we go upstairs for the free vegetarian feast. It's free. If you are inspired to make a donation, please do so. That's welcome.
I was thinking of giving a little slideshow, or is it too late? Yeah, okay. Okay. I think so. I don't know.
Speaking of the art of transformation, that's also a title of one of Maharaj's books. I believe we have some of his books for sale outside the door in the lobby there on the table. So please inquire about that, and we'll see. We're trying to figure out whether they're there. I think they're going to be there. And lastly, Maharaj will be speaking at the Radha Govinda Mandir in Brooklyn, the temple in Brooklyn, tomorrow night. That program starts at 7 o'clock. 7 o'clock in Brooklyn to see Sachinanda Maharaj again. And hopefully we will see you there and on Monday night. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.